This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, August 8th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The city of Eureka Springs welcomes cellist Sarah Santambrogio to the City Auditorium Sunday, August 24th at 2 p.m. Sarah performed in Eureka Springs in 2012 with her group, the Eroica Trio. She's back once again to share her talent and music. Tickets available online at theaud.org. That's theaud.org.
The Artists of Northwest Arkansas will host an evening reception this Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. 100 works from 69 artists in a 10-state area will be on display during the 20th annual ANA Regional Art Exhibition. This event is free and open to the public. More information is available at artistsnwarkansas.org.
Ahead on Ozarks, Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com talks to me about a pair of announcements this week that mean a combined loss of 750 jobs in Northwest Arkansas, and a report on yesterday's symposium dedicated to food animal well-being at the University of Arkansas.
First, a group backing current term limits for Arkansas legislators is announcing its support for a lawsuit meant to keep a measure off the November ballot that would loosen term limits. The co-chair of Arkansas Term Limits, Tim Jacob, claims some members of the legislature deliberately tried to mislead voters by not highlighting the term limit change in the title of the proposal, Issue 3.
Write an honest ballot title. If the legislature thinks that voters were wrong in two landslide elections, have the courage to say so. Don't hide it on page 16 of an unrelated amendment.
In 1992, voters approved term limits of 14 years with a six-year limit in the House and 8 years in the Senate. The ballot item would loosen the restriction to 16 years without having to be split between both chambers. The measure, championed as ethics reforms by its sponsors, also bans corporate campaign contributions to state candidates and limits some types of gifts from lobbyists.
In his campaign for governor, Democrat Mike Ross has unveiled what he calls his Senior Bill of Rights. The former congressman provided details during a speech yesterday in Hot Springs. In an interview afterward, he said the plan would protect and empower Arkansas's aging population.
Numerous regions in Arkansas are known for attracting retirees, and it's an important part of our economy in Arkansas. It stimulates our economy. It creates economic development. It puts people to work. And as governor, I want to send a message and make it very clear that we're gonna ensure that seniors can retire with the kind of dignity that they've spent a lifetime earning.
A spokesman for Ross's Republican opponent, Asa Hutchinson, responded to Thursday's announcement by Ross by calling the proposal vague promises.
The University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences is receiving a sizable grant for studying diabetes in the Marshallese community. Pearl McElfish, the director of research at UAMS Northwest, says the three-year, $2.1 million study is targeted at alleviating the prevalence of type 2 diabetes within the Marshallese population. McElfish says conventional diabetes treatments like one-on-one or group consultation hasn't worked as well within the Marshallese community, so she says this study wants to find a more effective means of treatment.
And about 8% of the population has diabetes, but within the Marshallese community, approximately 40 to 50% of adults develop type 2 diabetes. Traditional implementations of diabetes self-management education have shown to reduce complications in other populations, but really have not been effective within the Marshallese community. And so we've worked with the Marshallese community over the past year to help develop an intervention that is really based on the Marshallese culture and the traditional family values of the Marshallese community.
Funding for the program came from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, an independent nonprofit research organization that was authorized by Congress and receives funding from part of the Affordable Care Act.
More jobs are leaving Northwest Arkansas. Less than a week after Superior Industries announced the closure of its Rogers facility, Apex Tool announced yesterday it will close its Springdale manufacturing plant and move the 250 jobs there to South Carolina. The move will happen sometime next year, and the closure is part of the company's plan to consolidate production of its Made in the USA brands into one existing company facility.
The second compressed natural gas fueling station in Fort Smith opened Thursday. It is only the eighth such station in Arkansas. The two CNG stations in Fort Smith are owned by Arkansas-Oklahoma Gas Corporation, and the new one on Savannah Road has three times the capacity of the existing AOG station off of Rogers Avenue. AOG officials say the company invested roughly $1 million in building the new fueling station.
Cloudy tonight, showers and thunderstorms likely, lows from 70 in northwest Arkansas to the mid-70s for the Arkansas River Valley. Partly sunny tomorrow, but still a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow, lower 90s northwest Arkansas. Slight chance of rain with a high of 95 tomorrow in the Arkansas River Valley. Saturday night, slight chance of rain, otherwise mostly cloudy, lows from 70 to 75. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who happens to be the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and much more for our entire region. After a couple of weeks away, it's good to have you back on the air.
Well, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me back.
You bet. Let's start with lost jobs in northwest Arkansas, manufacturing jobs. Just this morning, kind of, the news broke that Apex Tool Group would shutter 250 jobs in the region. This comes on the heels earlier this week of Superior Industries announcing 500 jobs would be removed from the area.
Right. This is odd. It's almost like you have to tell your brain to say that there are job losses in northwest Arkansas. We're just, you know, I've covering business up there for a long time, and it's rare that we talk about job losses, especially of this magnitude. But yeah, a total of 750 between the two layoffs. And, you know, even though that economy, even though the Northwest Arkansas economy is doing so well and will continue to do well, you know, these type of jobs hurt. First of all, they're not just entry-level jobs. These are probably decent-paying jobs with good benefits, so that hurts. But interestingly enough, when the Superior layoffs happened, Grant Tenniel, who's head of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, provided an interesting quote, and he essentially said, look, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, you're going to lose jobs in Arkansas, where do you want to lose them? He said he would pick northwest Arkansas because it has the most resilient economy, and it's much more able than any other part of Arkansas to absorb those losses. And when he first said that, I thought, well, I'm not sure I would say that as a public official, but the more I thought about it, I mean, it makes sense. So,
it's better than, say, losing them in the Delta or...
Right.
Right.
Right. Now, you know, we interviewed Kathy Deck yesterday for this story, and she noted that, you know, between Superior and Apex, it's almost a 3%. It's a 2.85% decrease in the overall manufacturing sector, which, you know, at some point, you know, that's gonna hurt. That's going to filter through the economy. So I doubt that it jacks the unemployment rate up, although anymore our jobless rate tends to not really reflect the health of the economy because we've lost so much from the labor force over the past, you know, 8 to 10 years. But it's not good. Let's hope this is the end of this string.
Ryan Saylor, who works for the City Wire, had a story this week on thecitywire.com about Fort Smith and its continuing attempts to comply with the Clean Water Act. And a figure is thrown out here that eventual cost of $350 million?
Yeah, and that, you know, Kyle, that could be on the low side. The city has spent just a little over $200 million since 1993. Part of the problem, Kyle, is for decades, the city of Fort Smith invested little to nothing in the water and sewer system. And, you know, that'll catch up with you eventually, and it caught up with Fort Smith in a big way. And so the Department of Justice you know, essentially came in and said you're violating several parts of the Federal Clean Water Act, and you've got to do this and this and this. And so the city's been under essentially an administrative order from the Department of Justice, and that could turn into a consent decree, which is a little bit more of a further step down the line in terms of punishment. And if that happens, that could require the city to spend a lot more, and it would require the city to spend a lot more in a shorter amount of time, which could, you know, that becomes a financial burden. So the number they threw out, it could cost another $150 million or more. I think they're I think they're on the estimating on the conservative side for $150 million. It could be more than that. But where we are now, Kyle, or where the city is now, they're waiting for they've made an argument before the Department of Justice that, look, give us more time. We're making progress. Don't force us to, you know, pack all this work in another 3 to 5 years. Give us another 10 or 20 years to get this. We're moving on it. Because if the Department of Justice requires them to do it quickly, the water and sewer rates in Fort Smith could rise. There might be another sales tax adjustment. Who knows? But it could be painful.
Back in April 2011, the first compressed natural gas fueling station opened in Fort Smith. Now another one.
Yep, the second one opened, formally opened yesterday, by Arkansas-Oklahoma Gas Corp. Now, they were the first one to open a public station. There's several private fleet stations around the state, but AOG opened the first public facility in April 2011. And since then, seven more have opened around the state, and three are under construction, two in Springdale and one in West Memphis. And so at some point there will be 11. At some point, I think by the end of the year, there could be 11. And so, you know, what we're seeing around Arkansas is what we're seeing around the country. More and more companies that have fleets and governments that have fleets of vehicles, and they call them captured fleets. It means you're essentially driving within a certain area, and every night you bring your vehicle back to a certain place.
Right.
And so those types of vehicles are prime candidates for CNG. For example, right now, the cost equivalent for a gallon of natural gas is $1.63. And regular gas is, what, $3.15, $3.20 now? I don't, you know,
it varies day to day, but yes, over well over $3.
But, yes. So not only is maintenance less on CNG motors because it's less, the natural gas is cleaner burning, but you know, you're saving, there are considerable savings. And so even if your conversion costs are anywhere from $6,500 to $10,000, a lot of these fleets, you know, there are construction companies here in Fort Smith that are using them, and the owners say, you know, we're seeing a payoff within 18 months or 2 years. Hmm. So, you know, now unfortunately the city of Fort Smith has not made any investments in CNG, but I know the Springdale Water and Sewer System is in the process of buying two trucks that they're going to use as kind of a pilot program to see
if they could convert everything. Yeah.
Right. And they have 70 vehicles that they could convert, so that's huge. So, you know, depending on how many miles you drive, you know, I know that Mike Callen, he's with AOG, of course, he's biased. I mean, they sell the gas, but he says, you know, their operational costs are just significantly lower than they've been by using CNG. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's clean burning. I mean, when you burn natural gas, the emission is water, so it doesn't get much cleaner than that. So I think it's going to catch on. And I think, and we've got plenty of natural gas in this country. You know, some of the energy industry estimates are that we have over 100 years of natural gas in storage. So,
though, of course,
it's plenty of time. It's plenty of time to figure out how we can all get jetpacks, right?
Finally, quickly, Arkansas voters didn't have a primary on Tuesday. Missouri voters did, and not that anyone was thinking the Bella Vista bypass or the completed I-49 would happen anytime soon, but when a transportation tax proposal was defeated by voters in Missouri Tuesday, it just let us know that these things will continue to creep along.
Yep. Yeah, creep along is right. You know, it's about
creep along might be optimistic, actually.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's certain. It is uncertain. It's a roughly $50 million is what Missouri officials have told the City Wire it will cost to complete about a 5 mile section from to the border there in Bella Vista. Now that may sound like a lot, but if anyone's familiar with that terrain, that's not just flat terrain you can roll on interstate.
You're blasting some stuff.
Yes, so Missouri officials have essentially said, look, we're back to square one on funding. We're going to have to figure out how we get our funding. And, you know, Arkansas has its funding, and it's working toward completing its part of the Bella Vista bypass. So, you know, that drive through, you know, Bella Vista, you know, you may have to, travelers may have to suffer through that for several more years just to get to the open I-49 section and further up in Missouri.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers transportation, business, politics, and much more. Michael, thank you very much.
All right. Everybody have a good weekend.
Later on Ozarks, four young, talented musicians talk to Robert Ginsberg about what they picked up at a prestigious summer jazz workshop.
I came back with such a fire, and I practiced nonstop when I got back for weeks.
Music and more from inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. In the background is bassist Walter Savage. You'll hear his music, plus the music of the Tritones, Matt and Gus Smith, Claudia Burson, and a host of musicians that will be performing at the final KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series when you tune in Shades of Jazz this Friday night from 10 till midnight, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The fourth annual symposium on advances and current issues in food animal well-being took place yesterday at the John Tyson Poultry Science Center on the U of A campus. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The mission of the UA Center for Food Animal Well-being is to improve animal health, handling, food safety, and productivity through the use of optimal welfare practices. This was the fourth annual animal well-being symposium hosted at the U of A. Dr. Joy Mensch was a featured speaker. She's a professor of animal sciences at UC Davis. She's developed environmental enrichment strategies for lab rodents and rabbits. She's also conducted behavioral research on poultry with the aim to improve housing, handling, and management. She says animal agriculture is slowly but surely shifting.
So there's a lot of discussion nowadays about what makes a system sustainable. So even from the perspective of animal welfare, we have to balance behavioral freedom for the animals with animal health considerations. Sometimes those two things don't coincide with each other. On the broader scale, we have to think about food affordability, food safety considerations, the environmental impacts of systems. So I think now there's a lot of discussion about whether these systems we've developed, which have been primarily motivated, I would say, by producing large quantities of food at a low price, to what extent they are sustainable in the broader sense.
Because the dairy, poultry, and beef industry are invisible to the general public, consumers get most of their information from retailers, Mensch says.
For them right now, I think it's really the emphasis on understanding how the food system works, understanding what concerns their consumers have that they need to direct their attention toward, whether that's animal welfare or whether that's environmental issues, and then working with the producers to create some standards, some guidelines to help meet those expectations of their consumers.
No federal animal welfare laws have been enacted in the United States yet. But Mensch says retailers are helping to push better practices.
I started working with McDonald's in about 1999, the same time I started working with the U.S. egg industry. And our initial goal was to set standards for conventional cage production. The amount of room that the birds need to be provided, ammonia levels in the building. There's a practice called molting that where the hens, when their production starts to decline, you have them molt their feathers and they come back into production again. That used to be done by taking away the food and sometimes the water for an extended period of time. So for both McDonald's and the egg industry, that practice was discontinued. But McDonald's has been very proactive and has funded a big project that I've been working on for the last 3 years for a big team of researchers to collect data from different kinds of hen housing systems on all aspects of sustainability. So that's McDonald's in coalition with a lot of other retailers, and that's going to enable them to make some decisions in the future about their egg supplies and what directions they want to go in.
Confined animal feeding operations that raise tens of thousands of cattle, swine, or turkeys per batch to slaughter provide the girth of the U.S. meat chain. So that's where animal welfare scientists like Dr. Joy Mensch are concentrating.
There is this some somewhat philosophical position that if we raise animals in large numbers, in large groups, in concentrated operations, that therefore it is bad. I'm not focused in that way. I'm focused more on identifying the problems we have in particular kinds of production systems and figuring out how we can fix those in a way to make the systems even more sustainable.
And to be clear, Mensch says, there's no distinction between the usage animal welfare versus animal well-being. They represent the same thing. More than 180 participants turned out for the symposium, a mix of contract growers, scientists, small farmers, and industry representatives. Some came specifically to hear this woman.
My name is Temple Grandin, and I am professor of animal science at Colorado State University.
Temple Grandin is an internationally known expert and author on autism spectrum disorder. She was severely autistic as a child. She also is a noted animal welfare scientist, industrial farm designer, and advocate. Her remarkable life was chronicled by actress Claire Danes in the Emmy Award-winning HBO movie titled Temple Grandin. Her humane livestock raising and slaughterhouse facilities have been universally adopted. She's also developing an objective scoring system for assessing cruel handling of cattle and swine based on vocalization metrics.
I would classify myself as someone who really cares about animal welfare. Kind of put things really, really simply, animal welfare, we want to be better stewards of the animals. Animal rights, you're getting into a lot of anti-meat. I eat all the meats. I eat eggs. I eat poultry. I eat all of them. But I feel very strongly we've got to handle animals right.
One thing that concerns Grandin currently is the intensive breeding practices to produce the most profitable animal.
What I call biological system overload. We're pushing this dairy cow. We're pushing this laying hen. The dairy cow, for example, milk production's gone up and up and up. And if you put it on the graph, milk production's gone way up. Reproduction's gone way down. You see, I think there's trade-offs. Laying hens have extremely high levels of osteoporosis and broken bones. I think we have to start looking at what is optimal production, looking a lot better at the whole system. I'm getting very concerned about problems with lack of disease resistance. If an animal puts everything into the production, there's nothing left for reproduction and for fighting off disease.
Education is key.
People want to know where their food comes from. I think there's some practices we're going to need to change. Sow stalls, we need to get rid of that. We need to figure out a way to get to anesthetize baby pigs when we castrate them. There's some things like that that have to be changed. You know, there's some things we have to change. But there's no way we can just put all the pigs back outside. That's just not going to be sustainable. We need to fix some things, and then we need to be opening up the door and showing people. And I think the talk this morning on the tours of the chicken farm and the dairy and the beef farm, we need to be doing a lot more of those kinds of things. In fact, I have some videos. Beef plant video tour with Temple Grandin, pork plant video tour with Temple Grandin, and turkey plant video tour with Temple Grandin. You can look those up on YouTube.
Incorporating animal welfare best management practices into intensive animal agriculture to meet consumer demands for McNuggets and McBurgers will take time, says Temple Grandin.
Well, the animals that we use for food, we've got to give them a life that's worth living. That's what the Farm Animal Welfare Council said maybe over 20 years ago in England. And give them a, you know, painless death. Those are things we need to be doing for the animals.
The symposium was sponsored in part by Tyson Foods, Butterball, Cobb Vantress, and McDonald's. To learn more about the work being accomplished on animal well-being at the University of Arkansas, visit foodanimalwellbeing.uark.edu. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Time to give some things away.
Okay.
Yesterday told you that we would have four Naturals vouchers. They've only got about 11 games left at Arvest, plus four passes good at any area Malco movie theater. All you had to do was send something to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lucille Ball.
You were listening.
I was listening.
So the funny, you're the only person who's had a woman, which is interesting.
You were asked, yes, one of the things.
Yes.
You didn't have, I'm sorry, for people that didn't hear the show yesterday, I'm sorry. you asked people if they wanted, they just had to enter their name to be entered into the drawing, but if they wanted to tell you the person they thought was the funniest person. And I say Lucille Ball. I grew up watching a lot of I Love Lucy.
I think that's a great choice. Mine would be Groucho Marx, but I'd give you Lucille Ball. Some other folks said Groucho, Robin Williams, Jerry Seinfeld, Steve Martin, Tim Conway, who's very funny. Robert Fitzgerald is one winner.
Okay.
We'll get in touch with you, Robert. He said his parents. So I guess someone else would say a woman.
Okay, well done.
And Zakir Syed, who said John Stewart.
Oh, yes, that's a good choice as well.
Robert, Zakir, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. We'll be in touch with you and find out your address to send you your winnings.
Congratulations.
It is Friday, August 8th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm still stuffed.
From New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that city will do.
And you'd think that the last thing I would want to do is come up with a Chinese menu for this week. But it's not food. It's entertainment. So
okay.
It's okay.
All right.
And otherwise, there's just no way to fit it all in. And this way, it's your problem.
Do any of these have to do with tomorrow being Smokey Bear's 70th birthday?
No.
I was going to ask you about that. Of course, you know. Never mind.
Yes.
I was so
proud. I've had this circle on my calendar.
I thought I had some trivia for you, and I heard some stuff on Morning Edition, and I was like, oh, maybe he doesn't know that Smokey Bear's birthday is tomorrow. Do you know who does his voice?
He was in The Big Lebowski. Gosh, I can't think of his name, Ron.
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott.
And did you know they have the exact same birthday?
Sam Elliott and Smokey Bear?
Oh, I got one. Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Yes.
Nobody ever beats him at trivia.
I know.
Okay. Column A, theater. Ignore them. I try to. Just a High School Play.
Arts Live.
Arts mm-hmm. Live. This is for older kids. It's looking at all of those representative characters that you remember from high school, too. The jock, the shy kid, the cheerleader, the joker. And how they deal with being who they are. 7 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock on Sunday. This is the only weekend run, so don't miss it. $6 to $8 at Arts Live Theater in Fayetteville. Oliver is on stage at the Lyric Theater in Harrison.
Yes.
7 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday. Tickets are $12 to $18. 9 to 5, the musical is wrapping up at Fort Smith Little Theater.
Summer's ending. Some of these musicals are in their final performances.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hate that. Mm. 7:30 today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock on Sunday. Tickets are $15. And Xanadu is wrapping up at Rogers Little Theater.
It's all 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which to some of them,
right.
I'm pointing at Antoinette. Well, you know, anyway.
It was a good time, I hear.
Showtimes are 8 o'clock today and tomorrow and 2 on Sunday. Tickets start at $10. Column B is out and about. I'm trying to keep these people on track, so we're going to fly. Ozarkumentaries.
Yes, Crystal Bridges.
A short film festival presented in association with the Seedling Film Association, 8:30 tonight at Walker Landing at Crystal Bridges.
Yeah, it's outdoors. I think it'll be fun.
And it's free.
And no film longer than 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And no film shorter than 90 seconds.
Good.
Yes.
I can't think that fast. This weekend is also bargains galore on 64. You know how I love yard sales.
Yes.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Starts in Fort Smith, runs all the way to BB. I've tried. You can't get.
I don't know how you could possibly.
Oh, you can't get 10 miles down the road.
Yeah.
But if you're smart, you find food on the way.
There you
go. Oh, wait. There we go. Gravit Days is this weekend at Kindley Park in Gravit.
They've been doing this for
a long time.
Ever.
I think it's 70 years or something. Tawnytown Great Festival is this weekend.
They've been doing that for over a century.
Yes.
Arts and crafts, spaghetti dinners,
grape
live
ice cream.
Music, grape ice cream. You know, I've never had the spaghetti there.
What?
Last year was the first year I had it.
The lines are always so long, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't
it
go stand
good,
in
though.
One.
Your Northwest Arkansas bona fides aren't complete till you've checked that one off.
Oh, I know.
Honestly, last year was the first year I went.
Is it amazing?
It was really good. Spaghetti is not my favorite dish, but I did enjoy it.
And your favorite is the grape ice cream.
Yeah.
Okay. Spaghetti dinners are $6 for kids and $12 for adults. Also, the Tawnytown Historical Museum has a new exhibit called Gowns and Crown.
Cool.
Which is about Queen Concordia. They have 8 Queen Concordia gowns, several crowns, and other Queen Concordia memorabilia, as well as the coronation robe.
And let me tell you, I hung out in Tawnytown a couple weeks ago. I was coming back from working on stories in Siloam Springs and pulled into that park. And, you know, they've taken those poor damaged trees and turned them into sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth hanging out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And column C is music.
Okay.
The Coverlets is tonight at the Art Center of the Ozarks.
Yes.
That's the face of you forgot to get tickets, didn't you?
Well,
he has other plans.
Unfortunately. I mean, there's so much going on, but they're great.
They are. Leo Mazo and Brittany Stevenson. She has an amazing voice. Mm-hmm. He has an amazing sense of humor. It should be a lot of fun. The concert is called Music to Rob a Train By, and it's the first of this year's Main Street Music Night series. Tickets are $16 for adults, and that's 7:30 tonight at ACO. And the Composer's Showcase.
That's right.
The last of the KUAF Summer Jazz Series.
See, summer's ending.
Ah. 8 o'clock Saturday at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville, and tickets for that are $25 to $35. And, yeah, summer's ending. Let's run as fast as we can.
Well, if you're going to hit even half of those, you have to run a lot.
Exactly.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, and on this week's On the Media, the present and future of artificial intelligence, and why is Google buying up all those robot companies?
I think that robot Armageddon is going to be economic, not a physical war.
We peer into a future with robots on the next On the Media from WNYC.
Sunday at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Northwest Arkansas Human Resource Association presents Advocacy in Action, a two-part series, August 14th, starting at 11:30 a.m. at the Springdale Holiday Inn. Arkansas Secretary of State Mark Martin will speak, as well as political representatives, discussing the legislative process and how to effectively get involved. Registration is required. NOARK.org for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. This weekend, the 2014 KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series does close out with the annual Composer Showcase at George's Majestic Lounge Saturday night. The annual affair brings local jazz musicians and composers to one stage to perform original material in a variety of settings, duos, trios, quartets, even octets. Saturday night's concert, like the others in the Summer Jazz Series, helps the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society raise money for scholarships for young musicians in the area. This week, Robert Ginsberg, the founder of the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society and the host of KUAF's program Shades of Jazz, talked to four recipients of scholarship money. He also invited them to play in the studio as well.
Earlier this week, I had the great pleasure to interview and record live in the studio four music students who are on their way to careers as professional musicians. All four of these students share in common a scholarship award that they received from the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society to attend the Jamie Abersold Summer Jazz Studies Camp. Three of the students went this year, and one, Clay Johnson, was the recipient last year. Matt Mazzoni is a guitar student, and he lives up in Rogers. He's 20 years old. Kirsten Burgess has just graduated high school last year in Bella Vista, grew up in a musical family, and is pursuing his musical career as a drummer. Michael Hanna is a student at the University of Arkansas here in Fayetteville, and he plays saxophone. The four of them were gracious enough to come up and record a few tunes and talk about their experience at the Jamie Abersold Summer Jazz Study Camp. The students will have a chance to show off their skills at the final concert in the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series, which is coming up Saturday, August the 9th at George's Majestic Lounge. Our saxophonist Michael Hanna was unable to participate in the interview. He had a rehearsal right after we recorded these tunes. But I was able to interview Matt Mazzoni, Garrison Burgess, and Clay Johnson. Beginning here with guitarist Matt Mazzoni.
So I'm a student at NWAC. I'm studying with Ben Harris currently. I'm a music major. I'm studying music education.
I'm Garrison. I formerly went to Bentonville High School, graduated this year. I will be a freshman at the University of Arkansas, doing percussion studies and mastering in music education. I've been playing drums for about 8 years. I've been taught by some of the greats, Frank Majsterski and Darren Novotny. And I've been playing music all my life. The goal was playing drums, and finally here. So.
And Clay, your career has launched.
Sort of. I graduated in December from the University of Arkansas. I took with Dr. Greason, majored in music with a minor in business. I thought that was a good backup plan. You always have to have something to fall back on.
You mean if the business degree doesn't work out?
Exactly. The music thing will take off right then. And I've been playing since I was 16, I guess. The last 6 months, I've just been playing music around town in several different groups of different genres, not necessarily jazz, but country and rock and things of that nature. So I've been having a lot of fun with it.
What year did you go to Ebersol?
It was last summer, so 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. I had a blast. The audition process when you got there was kind of nerve-wracking, but as soon as you met the instructors and they were all really nice and ready to help everybody and of all skill levels.
So Jamie Ebersol runs this summer music camp, and he is probably one of the foremost jazz educators in the world. Last year, he received the National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Master Award for his work in education. And this summer camp is truly a phenomena. It's people from all over and all ages, really, come to this camp, from adults to very young students. And they have studies in all the instruments. And, Matt, I'm kind of curious. I know that there's certain instruments up there that are heavily represented, and the guitar is certainly one of them. So tell me a little bit about your experience at the camp.
There were definitely a lot of guitar players there, which was kind of daunting. Like Clay said, the audition process was kind of crazy. You walk in, you see these really well-known jazz guitarists, and they're sitting there, and they're like, okay, you know, take two courses, and you sit down, and, you know, this, you just got to Kentucky, you drove 9 hours, and you sit down, and you're playing with Dave Stryker, and it was an interesting experience, for sure.
And the purpose of the audition is so they know where to place you guys.
Right.
In what ensembles,
right.
What level of...
Yeah, you audition basically so that they could put you in a combo based on your skill level. So that way, you know, there's some people that are in your combo that are going to be a little bit better than you, and some that are maybe not as experienced.
Well, and I'm assuming that everyone that attends this camp is vetted to a certain degree. In other words, you got to be able to read music. You have to have studied music to some extent.
Yeah, they actually have beginner classes. I met somebody while I was there, and they were like, yeah, I picked up a guitar last week, and it was crazy. They were there.
Yeah,
I don't know how they got there.
Well, they're not going to turn away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The money, but
not even a guitarist.
But there was also a music theory test as well that you did, which placed you in a music theory class that you went to every day.
I think my combo had a 50-year-old guitar player from France and a 15-year-old drummer from California.
See, yeah.
And another guitar player, of course. We had two or three in our combo, and he was from Ohio, so, I mean, we had people from all over the place, and they were all right about our skill level. They did a good job with the placement.
Good job. Our drummer was from Brazil. He didn't speak any English at all, so it was funny watching this legendary pianist, David Hazeltine, kind of pantomiming his way through jazz standards was interesting, to say the least.
It just sounds like such an incredibly stimulating and challenging environment.
Yeah.
I mean, Ebersol's overriding theory is that everybody on the planet can improvise music. And I'm sure there must have been opportunities where he espoused his theories about this. And how did that sit with you guys? I mean, it's one thing to be able to say anybody can improvise music, but at what level? And at what level are you willing to be pleased enough with yourself to go on? I mean, that seems to be the daunting part of it to me.
Your ego takes a little bit of a beating when you get there.
Here are Matt Mazzoni on guitar, Michael Hanna on saxophone, Garrison Burgess on drums, and Clay Johnson on the bass, performing a tune written by Joe Henderson called Recordame. Thank you.
Yeah, like you said, it was really stimulating. You're doing music for 8 hours a day, and then you finish up with all your classes, and at the end of the day, you go to there were faculty concerts every night, and so those were good to go and see and figure out what you're doing wrong. Those were interesting too.
I came back with such a fire, and I practiced nonstop when I got back for weeks. Just, you know, all the tools that they had given me kind of overloaded me with information. But when I got back, I could take what I'd learned and space it out and work on things individually to kind of build my skill set.
That kind of sounds like the phenomena that I imagine occurs with practice. You practice and you burn out, and then a week later you realize that it actually did some good, mm-hmm. whether it be muscle memory or just being more relaxed or whatever. Garrison, can you share any anecdotes or experiences that were particularly memorable for you?
You know, I think some of the most memorable times were definitely our combo times where we got together. I had a Corey Christiansen, great guitar player. He was my combo leader.
Oh, yeah.
Corey. He's performed at the Summer Jazz Concerts before.
He's fantastic.
He's incredible.
He was my combo leader. We had 9 people in our combo. Yeah, that's about right. You know, I tell you what, like over the week, it took us like the first, you know, first we had 2 combo times in a day. It took us that first hour and a half kind of to get to know each other, lock in a little bit. And then by the end of the week, we were swinging. It was a lot of fun. And then Corey wrote us all letters of things to improve mm-hmm. on and things that we did well on. And it was really touching that, you know, he would go out of his way to, you know, take time out of a really busy week. I mean, literally, as soon as our concert was done, as soon as our combo concert was done on Friday, he was in the car, on a plane, and he was out.
He's a busy guy.
He's extremely busy. So for him to take the time to write all 9 of us letters, you know, saying, "Hey, great job at this. Here's some cool things you can work on." You know, it was really touching for all of us.
Yeah, like you said, I think one of the instructors, Dave Stryker, actually drove, I think, 9 hours to play a gig one night and then drove 9 hours back and didn't sleep at all and then was there the next morning to come teach classes. So they're all really busy guys. And it's awesome seeing that they're taking the time to kind of, you know, help people usher in the new age of jazzers.
Yeah.
So
jazz never sleeps. Did you have any experiences, Matt, that were particularly stand out for you?
I mean, the whole week was really incredible. You're surrounded by incredible musicians the whole time. Like Clay said, it lights a fire under you to come back home and practice. But my favorite part was probably the faculty concerts, seeing some of these legendary guys just get up there and, you know, they're burning. One of my favorite moments was when Dave Stryker, I was in a master class with Dave Stryker, and he sat me down and said, "You know, Matt, if you work really hard and you practice really hard, you can make hundreds in this business." And that kind of summed it all up for me.
Well, obviously, anybody that's going into jazz is not doing it for the money.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So you guys have put together something that you're going to perform at the Composer Showcase, which is the final concert in the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. The showcase has been moved from the Walton Arts Center because of construction, and it's going to be at George's Majestic Lounge on Saturday, August the 9th at 8 o'clock. So it should be a great show. It is a showcase where we feature 6 or 7 different groups, ensembles, performing original compositions, which is really rare because most of the time people are gigging. There's waitresses in front of them and a big screen TV set behind them, and they're playing standards, and it's that kind of thing. This is really an opportunity for our regional jazz artists to shine and have a captive audience listening to their music. And you guys put something together. How did that come about?
Well, me and Michael met at camp, actually, and we started talking about it then. We came up with some ideas. And then once we got back here and Garrison got back, we kind of all hooked up. And we had Clay come and sit in, and he was a great help in getting the song put together.
That's great. Yeah. So it was a collaborative compositional effort. Yeah. What's the name of the tune?
It's called Dig Deeper.
And it's going to be premiered, the world premiere.
It's going to be the world premiere of our tune, Dig Deeper, at the Composer Showcase.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you all for being here, fellas. Matt Mazzoni, who was our guitar scholarship recipient. Garrison Burgess, who is the drummer from Bella Vista. And Clay Johnson, who was our scholarship recipient and on bass last year. Unfortunately, Michael Hanna had to run to a rehearsal with the Fayetteville Jazz Collective Octet tonight. So we'll all speak for him. And and we'll close out with a little teaser of your original composition, but I won't play much.
Okay.
Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Robert Ginsberg is the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, heard every Friday and Saturday night beginning at 10. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series will end with a Composer Showcase Saturday night at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. The showcase will feature regional jazz musicians performing original compositions, including new music and world premieres in a variety of ensembles, from solos, duos, trios, to octets. This series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society, and tickets are available online at digjazz.com. Don't need a woman like that.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. We're going to preview an EP put out by the Cape Brothers Band, something recorded in 1982 called the Malibu Sessions. Also, new music from the Alex P. Suter Band, Elvin Bishop, and more. Again, that's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Eureka Springs is one of the top arts destinations in Arkansas. This historic village of 2,100 residents, over 200 artists, and more than 35 galleries presents weekend tours and second Saturday gallery strolls each month through December. Eureka Springs, where American art is made.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Middleton.
Where's that?
Carroll County.
Okay. Have you been there?
Yeah, there's not a lot there anymore.
Oh, okay.
But there's still, last time I went through, there was still the sign, that little green state sign.
Okay.
So it's a community at the very least.
All right. Going anywhere this weekend?
Kansas City.
You're going to Kansas City?
I'm going to the Color of Hope fundraiser tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a turquoise shirt and tie on my own.
Oh.
Combination didn't get, like, rave reviews last night when shown to Laura.
Well, maybe you should just do one or the other.
Wow. Did you guys text each other or something?
No. I haven't talked to her at all. It was just sometimes color, the same color can work, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yes. Now, these aren't quite the same color. The reason, because the tie barely has turquoise in it, because turquoise ties are not exactly, and also the store I went and eventually bought my material, Joe, who was helping me, said, what is going on?
Yeah.
A lot of men waiting till Thursday afternoon.
I think that's typically what happens to these things.
Well, turquoise is not a color that's in abundance for men.
No, I would say not.
Anyway, going to that, then I'm going to go see the Royals, who, if the playoffs began today, would be in the playoffs. Going to see them play Saturday night and Sunday afternoon at Kauffman Stadium.
So is there not a good chance that they'll be in the playoffs?
No, there is. It's just, this is an old sports term, that if the playoffs began today, these are the teams who are qualified.
Okay, well, given the rest of their schedule?
They actually have a favorable schedule. The next seven games are against pretty good teams, A's and Giants.
Okay.
But they don't look pretty they should.
I mean, I don't want to make you jinx anything, knock on wood.
No.
But, you know, it's been long enough. 85?
Your lifetime.
It's been more than my lifetime.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, more than my lifetime.
Hey, our theme is written and performed by Daryl Shawn. You can learn more about him and his music at darylshawn.com. His latest CD is In Place. If you happen to be in New York City tonight, you can see him play at Rockwood Music Hall. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Where are you going this weekend?
Kansas. I'm not Bueller, Kansas, I think. I have a friend.
Bueller?
I think I'm saying that correctly. It's near Hutchinson.
That's where I was born.
Well, there you go. I have a friend who lives there and works at the public radio station up there.
Go through the salt mines. That's what I say.
Where is that?
Underground. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks for listening.